Hey there, this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast, and I'm your host, Betsy Jewell. Today, I'm excited to bring you not one, but two amazing guests, Cynthia Muchnick and Jen Curtis. They're the authors of The Parent Compass, Navigating Your Teen's Wellness and Academic Journey in Today's Competitive World. You might be wondering right now, just what is The Parent Compass? Well, I'm glad you asked. During our conversation, Jen and Cindy talk about how and why they wrote their book. They also share their expert advice for helping our teens learn how to develop grit and resilience, and why nothing matters more than our relationship with our teens. Be sure to stick around until the end when Jen and Cindy share our number one job as parents. Along with advice and insight, after listening to our conversation, you will walk away with actionable steps that you can put in place today. Now let's get started. Hi, Cindy and Jen. Thank you so much for being here today on the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
So we're going to talk today about The Parent Compass, and I love the name of this book because, boy, it gives you a visual of what you really need, and boy, do we need a compass when we're helping our kids navigate, particularly the teenage years. So let's just start. I have a lot of questions, but before we get into all of that, can you just take a minute, each of you, and introduce yourself to my audience?
Sure. I'm Cindy Muchnick. I'm one of the co-authors of The Parent Compass. My background is started in college admissions, where I sat on the other side of the desk, interviewing students, reading applications, traveling to college fairs, all of that. And then it grew into a private college counseling business that I had for close to 15 years, at least. I'm trying to remember. I retired a few years ago from that. And I'm a mother of four. I have a launched adult who's 23 years old and is an English teacher in Boston. And I have a current college student. And I'm also the parent of a high school freshman and a high school junior. So I am just like our readers in the throes of parenting teens myself.
And I'm Jen Curtis. I am an educational consultant in Orange County, California. I own FutureWise Consulting. And have been doing college counseling there for the past 13 years, working with teens since 2005. I've worked with hundreds of high school students from across the country on all aspects of academic planning and college admission. I also come to the educational consulting field with a background in mental health and research, and I really like to infuse that perspective in my work with students. And I am married to my husband, Mike, and we have two girls, 8 and 5.
Great. So you guys, between the two of you, have covered just about every facet of the teenage experience. And Jen, you're going to be bringing kids right through that soon enough, right? But let's talk about The Parent Compass, because How did it all start? Had you two been working together before? Were you collaborating? And how did you come up with the name and what it was going to be about and all that?
So The Parent Compass started really as a strange reaction to, in March of 2019, the college admission scandal. When the admission scandal erupted, Jen was my first phone call. I had known Jen for, I don't know, close to 10 years as professional colleagues. We had met from time to time for lunch and had done a few workshops together. And I just really liked her perspective and felt, you know, professionally like she was just an incredible colleague and sounding board for me through the years. We'd never talked about writing a book together ever until the day this, scandal erupted. We were just shocked and appalled and really felt a gut punch that day that continued until, you know, even now when these, final parents and people involved in the scandal are being, you know, tried and convicted. So we decided that, you know, we had seen some hints of concerning behavior in parents that we had, you know, connected with in our journeys in counseling their students. And we had also seen some parents that were doing amazing jobs as their kids would thrive. And we just decided that there needed to be a better toolbox and a better roadmap for parents in navigating these really tricky years that have grown to be competitive beyond, you know, extremes where parents are breaking the law to, you know, try to get their kids into certain colleges that they think are the right colleges. And in addition to that, you know, the mental health of teens is just really tragic. And we felt like by better equipping parents in the home, in that relationship they have with their teens, maybe we can make a small difference in the planet, in, you know, improving the mental health of teens and preserving the relationship between teens and their parents. And then Jen can tell you a little bit about the title and what the Parent Compass means.
So I'll start with the title. So, we always laugh because we had a different title from the beginning that we were actually very tied to. Originally, well, this is a book on parenting etiquette, we like to say. So parenting behavior, the types of behaviors that best facilitate relationships with your teens and thriving kids. And, along the way are actually kind of close to when our book went to press. We had what we call the title crisis and we had to come up with a new title. And after honestly brainstorming everything under the sun, I don't think we left any stone unturned. We came up with the Parent Compass. We pulled our friends and family. It was the winner. Looking back, I personally, I don't know if Cindy would agree, but I'm glad it ended up being what it was, because we have been able to take that as a tool, I guess. It now is sort of representative of what we want parents to be doing, which is following their parent compass. So checking themselves, holding themselves accountable for their behavior. Always looking at the long-term effect of their parenting rather than just looking at what I need to do right in this moment. What is what I want to do? What is what I'm going to say to my child right now? What is that in service of? And so the Parent Compass is really a way to help parents understand their appropriate role in navigating the tween and teen years. Given, as Cindy said, this hyper-competitive environment and now this uncertain world landscape that we're in. A Parent Compass is a way to really evaluate your choices.
And I would add one more thing that I hadn't really thought about until this morning when I was getting ready to meet with you. And I was thinking about the title of your show, The Hamster Wheel. And I really felt like, you know, your show was representing something about, you know, kids probably being on this hamster wheel that just sort of never ends of just constant busyness and a sense of just, you know, repetitive motion and just never being able to really get off this wheel. And it's funny because I feel like our parents too need to kind of get off the hamster wheel as well. And I think that's a little bit what the Parent Compass is trying to do. It's saying, don't do it the way everyone else is doing it, that's maybe not doing it that way. Do it in a way that's true to you and try to apply some of these tools so that you can get off of the rat race, get off the hamster wheel, and just kind of help your child create their own journey that doesn't replicate everyone else's and just doesn't feel like a monotonous, exhausting process that never ends. And so I just felt like the hamster wheel and the Parent Compass seem to go really well together in their two titles. So anyway,
I love the way that you used hamster wheel and rat race in there, like rodents, like just too many rodents, you know, you just need to avoid the rodents and go the way that
that's
you should
right.
be going.
That's right.
Yeah. And I agree. I think I have been focusing on getting our kids off the wheel, but you're right. I mean, so I'm a parent of two teens as well, two boys. One's a senior in high school and one's a sophomore. And I am watching this happening right in front of my eyes. And I am working very hard not to be that parent, right? And it's funny, I've always kind of been a hands-off parent when it comes to this kind of stuff, but you get drawn in. It's like, this culture, right? And I keep saying it's like a fear-based culture from a parent standpoint, right? My kid's not going to be good enough. I'm not going to be a good enough parent if he doesn't get into X school. Or people are going to judge me if my kid doesn't go to college and takes a different route. Like, it's all about, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, because you have a lot more experience in this than I do, but it's a lot of that fear-based decision-making and just being involved on a level that they shouldn't be.
I think I love what you said, because I do think a lot of it comes back to, what is all this going to say about me? If my child doesn't do what I think he or she should be doing, you know, how am I going to look? And we wrote, in effect, we wrote an entire chapter about that. And the backstory is, we ended up finishing writing the whole Parent Compass. And as we were doing our edits, we were kind of reading through and discussing through point by point everything that we had said. And we realized that there was this big chasm that we left open. We were asking parents to adopt some strategies, and some difficult strategies. We're not here to say that we're perfect parents and or that all these strategies are easy. We know that they're difficult. And so in asking them to really embrace these difficult strategies, we realized that we had not asked them to look at why they were parenting the way that they were. Why was it important to them that they looked a certain way? Or why was it important to them that their kids were in this or that, or that they pushed and controlled? And so we wrote a whole chapter with the concept of physician heal thyself, is what we like to say, behind the chapter. So before you can help someone else, as in your child, you need to take a good hard look at yourself and make sure that you are centered and well. And so we ask parents to ask themselves and ask their partner or another family member some really difficult questions about how they were brought up, how academics were treated in their home. And then also to then go to their kids with a whole list of questions that we have outlined, and ask their kids about their parenting, and really create some meaningful conversations. And we found that when parents went to their kids and said, look, I am trying to parent better, I would like to do these questionnaires together, can you help me do that? That humility really drew the kids in and really opened up some really vital lines of communication.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love about this book, is there's so many actionable steps. There's so many activities, questions to ask. Like, it's really, it's almost like, to you said, I think you said earlier, like a toolkit. It's not just read it and put it down. It's usable and reusable and actionable. So I love that about it.
Thanks, Betsy. Yeah, that is our goal in the book. And we've talked to people who've read it who will say, you know, I read the book in a weekend. We kind of laugh that it took us, you know, over a year to write, and they read it in a weekend. But I've read the book in a weekend, and I've already started trying a few of these things, and they're working. We get emails from parents. We sit in on book club conversations for families who have adopted the book as a book club read, who are sharing the information. And it does certainly make us feel good that some of these, you know, actionable steps are making a difference in, you know, their lives with their teens. And when you said earlier how the parents view all of this as a reflection on themselves, it's so ego-centered for us to, you know, put our kids as this sort of trophy pedestal, I don't know, prize that we're trying to kind of parade around and show off, as opposed to just really getting to know and appreciating that child we have for whatever skills they bring to the table, whether they are academic skills, artistic skills, service skills, communication skills, athletic skills, whatever it is they might have that excites them. Our job is to, you know, enhance and help support and appreciate that, as opposed to, you know, putting them into categories and labeling them and pushing and fixing and directing. And that's sort of, in a weird way, how parenting has turned into, that we're sort of trying to undo. And it's really hard what we're asking of parents. We're asking them to do these hard things for the sake of improving. And it's never too late. It's never too late to jump in and try it. So even if you have a senior in high school and you realize, oh my gosh, you know, they're about to launch, and what could I have done differently? Or do I even have time? There's still time. There's always time.
Right. Right. And yeah, you in the book refer to the snowplow and the helicopter and the tiger mom, I think. And that we've all been called those names, right? And it's, we get so annoyed. It's like, I'm not a snowplow. You know, I'm not doing that. But in a way, a lot of us are. Look, guilty. I'll raise my hand too. There have been times when I've jumped right in and been like, whoa, I got to step back. But I think another big point that you talk about too is preserving that relationship with our teens. Because the more I interviewed Dr. Adam Price recently, author of He's Not Lazy, and he talked about it's like the more we push, the more they pull back. And same, like we want to maintain that relationship because pretty soon they're going to fly the coop and we want it to be solid when they go, right? So what are your thoughts or what are your tips on that?
I think, so first of all, I 100% agree. And as Cindy said earlier, this all comes from a good place. I think parents inherently, most parents want what's best for their children. And so the pushing and the controlling comes because we think that we know best. But in doing so, we're not allowing our kids to make mistakes. And that's where the growth happens. That's where they learn. So I think that my biggest piece of advice would be that to, I'll give a little anecdote. One of my, awesome students from a few years ago, she had it all together. She was mature, she was responsible. And I just couldn't have thought more highly of her. When we were done with our work together, I asked her, all right, so What is it? What did your parents do? And she, without skipping a beat, she looked at me and she said, they made me do hard things. And that's always stuck with me. Something that I try to incorporate in my home with my kids to really, you know, whether, you know, my kids are younger. So whether that means sitting there as they struggle through tying their shoes to teens, you know, watching them as they make mistakes and fail, but they're embracing challenge and they're trying new things. I think that would be my biggest piece of advice. I also want to tag on to what you were saying about that relationship and the pushing. And we were on a podcast a few months ago with Dr. Dan, the parent footprint. And he said a quote that both of us really fell in love with. And we told him we were going to steal it from him. So he said that the only thing that leaves after 18 years, the only thing that leaves your home after 18 years is your relationship with your teen. And I think that that's just something that we all need to remember, that the pushing and the controlling is only going to undermine that. And it's not going to contribute to thriving kids. And we need to remember that that relationship, I think we can all agree that that relationship is at the end of the day, what we all really want. So just that's my other big piece of advice.
Oh, that gives me goosebumps, that quote. I might have to borrow it too. I'll give credit and credit again.
I know we keep, yeah. I wish we heard it sooner. We would have put it in the book. You know, we've met so many interesting people and had so many great conversations that, I mean, I haven't talked to Jen about a sequel, but I would love to take all of this new material that we've gathered since the book came out and, you know, and put it somewhere because it really is. It's so wonderful to talk with, you know, other experts in the field.
Yeah. Same. I mean, I keep saying I want to make a book out of all the over 100 episodes that I've done because I've gleaned so much wisdom and insight from people like you and others. And I like what you said, Jen. It's about, you know, we're helping them not fail, but learn to fail, right? Mm-hmm. And build grit and build resilience. And because I'm not popular for saying this, but I don't think that's happening in our public schools because, you know, it's just not from what I've seen anyway. And if we can help them do that at home, to your point, make them do hard things, we're going to help build that for them. So another part that you talked about was praising the journey and not the destination. And I talk about this all the time. Like when my boys come home and tell me they got an A or whatever, I'm like, that's great, but tell me about how you got there. Tell me what you learned. I mean, the grade's important, don't get me wrong, but not if you didn't learn anything and not if you didn't put any effort in. So how can parents get better at that, about helping their teens work harder for the journey, for the effort and for the journey, than just about the grade?
So one of the biggest barriers to instilling grit and resilience, as you mentioned earlier, is by praising the destination to the detriment of focusing on the journey. So we focus too much on the outcome and not enough on the process or the effort. So I love that you said that you're doing this. And honestly, I think human nature makes this difficult to do. I think we're all, you know, apt to say when our kid gets in the car, oh, you had a spelling test today, to show, you know, to, or well, for me, it's a spelling test, but for people with teens, you know, it's maybe more of a difficult paper was due or something like that. And so to show that we care, many of us just naturally, oh, how did it go? What did you get? And really, when we're doing that, we are fostering more of a fixed mindset. So this all is grounded in research, particularly research done by a woman named Carol Dweck. A fixed mindset is really rigid. And so as a parent, we might be focusing on awards or recognition rather than diving into what went on behind the scenes to get there and praising that. And so when we're doing that, our kids become tied to parental approval as opposed to a zest for truly exploring. And they start to identify with you know, either I'm smart or I'm not smart. So it's kind of this black and white fixed concept. And when we do that, kids will start to shy away from challenges and taking risks, because if they fail or make a mistake, they think that they're undermining whatever that, you know, identity that they've come to have. But then on the flip side, if we focus on that effort, that journey. So, you know, seeking extra help from a teacher, or all the time and effort they put into whatever that paper was, or maybe it's training really hard for some sort of athletic endeavor. When we focus on that and tell them that we noticed that and we were watching that, they start to learn that the more that they put in to their intelligence, their academics, or the more that they put into whatever endeavor they were after, it can grow. So it's called that's why it's called the growth mindset. And I think, you know, right there, it's how we start to teach our teens or younger kids how to embrace challenge, and we're normalizing mistakes. And you know, that's where they develop that grit and resilience that we've been talking about.
And we'll be right back after a quick break. You also talk in the book about teaching teens how to use goals. I love this, because I talk to my kids about goals all the time, and, you know, saving for this or planning for this, and everything is like, you know, they're an immediate gratification generation. So how do we teach them to plan ahead and to plan long-term goals?
So I am a huge fan of goal setting. So I employ this with my students at the beginning of any academic year. I have my students set 3 goals and then set measurable objectives to achieve those goals. Because I think what it does is it helps students embrace kind of intention and having an intentional mindset. Even in our home, I set work goals every year. My husband and I, on New Year's Day every year, go out to lunch, and we set our family goals. In the mornings, my kids set kind of an intention for the day when we're on our way to school. And the whole idea, as I said, is really to kind of set intention. That's sort of how, again, we learn to embrace challenge. And as parents, we can kind of introduce that concept into our homes.
And we'll be right back after this quick break.
Hello, and welcome to Guilty Greenie. I feel like we should start off this show by saying it's nearly impossible to be 100% sustainable given the current world we live in.
how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Not a great analogy for a vegetarian, but, you know.
We're talking about sustainability, maybe not the best analogy.
Don't eat the elephant is the first rule of the Guilty Green.
There's your first challenge of the week. Avoid elephants. What they used to call frugal is now considered sustainable.
That's such an aha moment. Frugal to sustainable.
You can save money and help the planet. That's going to be our new
tagline for sure.
You can find Guilty Greenie on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcast platform you prefer. And join us in tackling the Guilty Greenie challenges. Until then, stay curiously green.
Let's talk about navigating without a compass, because I think a lot of us are doing that. And that's not a criticism. I mean, we're all so busy. We have jobs and families. And gosh, the past year to 2 years has been a roller coaster, upside down. But I think a lot of us, well, I can speak for myself, feel kind of out of control, right? We're on this ride and it's like, slow it down. I want to get off. So how can we do that? How can we kind of find a better way to navigate through?
You know, I mean, I agree. The last, 18 months, 2 years, we've all been navigating without a compass. I mean, we're living in a time, I'm sort of been referring now to COVID as, almost like a World War III. I mean, it's just a totally inexperienced time for all of us that we're fighting this battle against an invisible disease. And it's become very visible in all of our lives. And it still has connected us globally in a way that I would not like to be connected globally by this pandemic. And so many of us, yes, we're kind of shooting blind and we're just doing the best we can. And I think that what I have found in, my colleagues and in fellow parents to sort of have worked the best is to kind of employ some skills that we know about, but to really employ them at a higher degree. So I think flexibility is incredibly important in terms of if our kids need more time for something, if our kids ask their teachers for more time, more help, more of an understanding, more of an empathy. And I think that, as parents, we've had to become incredibly flexible. So our kids had experienced school in a way we never envisioned that they would experience school through a computer screen, unless we were signed up for online school for some reason. And I did have a child that had done online schooling before the pandemic. And when the pandemic came, he said, "Not again, I'm done." And he happened to be in college at the time. And he said, "I don't want to spend a year of college online. And I'd like your permission or your support as I decide to take a leave of absence for a year and I'll work on an internship and do something else instead of doing a year of college online. It's just, I've already done that in my early years of high school and I don't want to go back to that." And as parents, we had to be flexible. We had to accept that. We had to understand that it's a time you just have to keep pivoting and pivoting and pivoting. And we may think we've been flexible, but we may even be stretched to become more flexible as new situations arise. And I think I hate to say there are silver linings of COVID, but I do think that parents, teachers, schools, there's a different level of acceptance and flexibility. We throw our arms up there and say, "Okay, here we are again. This is now typical." And as we get toward more normalcy, we're inching our way there, with kids back in school, but there's still always that uncertainty that weighs out there of when's the next shoe going to drop or what's going to happen in the winter or will the schools be able to, get everyone back in? And, all of those things are still uncertainty. So I think flexibility from parents is key. I think showing greater empathy to our kids and understanding of what you're going through, because we're also going through our own sets of issues as parents. So we're trying to support our kids while we're going through something we've never gone through before and trying to put on a brave face. And it's okay if we don't have the brave face all the time, because I find that when we're honest, I have broken down in tears in front of my kids, a handful of times through the year. And it has not been because I'm, sad about the loss of a person. It's because I'm sad about the loss of a life that we used to live. And so we as parents are needing help. And so I would definitely encourage finding a village, finding other like-minded parents to support you, finding a mental health counselor if that's something you need for yourself or for your teens. I love that we live in a time when mental health is not stigmatized. It's not viewed as something negative. I mean, I sort of chuckle at how many of my kids' friends say, my therapist told me this and my counselor told me that. And they're just saying it very matter-of-factly. And a generation ago, it was very secretive. If your kid was going to a therapist, you know, something was really wrong. And now it's almost like if your kid doesn't have someone else to talk to, a mentor, an advisor, a special teacher, a therapist, whatever it is, it's almost like we're not equipping them in the mental health realm. So I just think flexibility, empathy, paying attention to your own mental health and your kid's mental health, and giving ourselves a break and a pat on the back for what we're still going through. Just taking a deep breath. And I just did when I said that. It was like, oh, you know, we're here. We're getting through it. Jen and I did a really hard podcast a couple weeks ago with a news producer, and we got into the weeds of some really uncomfortable situations that kids are in right now. You know, there's a lot of problems out there, but we need to still try to keep pushing forward and moving forward and normalizing. And the Parent Compass, we reviewed it right before the book went to press, and COVID was just beginning as the book was going to press. And we panicked, like, will the Parent Compass answer this uncertainty that we have ahead? And really our subtitle is Navigating Your Teen's Wellness and Academic Journey in Today's Competitive World. And I would add the words now, and uncertain world. And the book really does hold a lot of validity. We think it's an evergreen title that will just continue to support parents as things feel like they're spinning out of control, whether it's in a competitive way or whether it's in a COVID way or whether it's in whatever's the next thing that we're going to encounter.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree. I think it's still, to your point, very valid, especially with the uncertainty. Like you could almost say that, not that you certainly didn't see it coming, but like you were preparing parents for, we don't know what's coming next. So
we had the opportunity to reread it and to change some things. There was this sort of, you know, little tiny window that our publisher gave us to update it and see if there was, you know, things that we needed to incorporate. And there was almost nothing that we could change in rereading it. We added literally a couple of key words here and there, and that was it. There was really nothing else to change. So, you know, I think that was kind of evidence to us that, as Cindy said, it's an evergreen title, and uncertainty, hyper-competitive, all of it, I think it's just kind of building.
We did write an article about, you know, why are parents still behaving badly? Why are they still behaving badly even when we have this resource, even when we look at Varsity Blues, even when we look at COVID and what that's done to our kids? And there are still always going to be those parents that are, you know, rushing, making up for lost time, feeling like they need to, you know, keep pushing. And we have seen, you know, we've seen the statistics, we have seen the results in our offices of these kids who are listless, unhappy, depressed, cannot speak for themselves, are not making their own choices, are fragile, are crying, you know, at the end sometimes of sessions, and not about the college admissions process. I mean, that almost isn't as stressful as having parents who are riding their kids like, you know, and it is very hard to break that cycle because it comes from a place of love, a place of protection, a place of fierce, you know, commitment to our kids. But we are definitely doing them a huge disservice by smothering them, especially in these tween and teen years when they need to become their own people. They are not going to be in our homes after this. So how can we maintain or sustain this level of involvement if we don't start to pull back sooner?
I was just going to add to what Cindy was saying. This last week, we had a really awesome opportunity. We have only seen each other now twice, but before this, one time since the book came out because of COVID and our whole book tour got canceled. Well, this last week, we both went back east and we got to do some in-person stuff and book signing, and it was so fun. But I was staying by myself at the time, and Cindy had some family that she was with, and I went out to dinner by myself one night, and I got to talking with this couple next to me, and the guy said, you know, just playing devil's advocate, if there is no pushing, I was telling him about the book and why I was there. And he said, well, if the parents don't do the pushing, then who is? You know, they're not going to have that competitive edge in our world. And I said, but that's just the point. The point is that the pushing is having the completely opposite effect of what's this intended for. It's intended to give them the competitive edge. But with so much pushing, the kids are pulling back and then they have no voice. As Cindy said, they are listless, they are depressed, they are anxious. And when they get to college, they completely flounder because they don't have the skills that they need to truly succeed at that time.
Absolutely. I've done a couple of episodes on failure to launch and kids who get to college and unravel. And a lot of that is based on the fact that they were never given autonomy and agency when they were in high school. And here they are in the real world, which college isn't even the real world, but it's the next step on the journey. And they're just not prepared. And you talked about flexibility. And I just think where our kids are concerned, pandemic or not, you know, here I go on my soapbox, but this is how High School Hamster Wheel started in the first place. Kids need to be able to explore and pursue the path that is best for them. And maybe it's college and maybe it's not. And maybe it's Ivy League and maybe it's not. But I think I've talked about this till I'm blue in the face, but parents have expectations for, you know, well, I didn't go to college, so you're going to go, or I didn't do this, so you're going to do it. Or, you know, I'm not a good parent if you don't do this. But if we would just take a giant step back and a deep breath, and allow our kids to just kind of figure it out for themselves, I don't think we'd have the dropout rate we have. I don't think we'd have the student loan debt that we have for kids who didn't finish. I mean, sorry, I'm on my soapbox. But I love that you're doing that in this book. And I really hope parents not only read it, but take it to heart and act on it. Because it's, you've seen it, right? You're experts. You've seen the kids come through. You've seen the stress they're under and the struggles that they're facing. You're not making this up. It's a real thing. And parents have to just kind of put their stuff aside and, you know, put their baggage in the overhead and just let their kids go.
You know, Betsy, you said something in that sentence, which is actually the final chapter of The Parent Compass, which is about alternative routes and not the belief that, oh, every single kid going through high school has to end up in college. It's just a journey, and some kids aren't ready for that next step or don't want that next step right then at the age of 18. And we address all of these other alternatives from, and actually you had a great quote, I think, on your site too, about trade school or about, you know, the military or taking a gap year or joining the job force a little bit sooner, or maybe going to community college and working part-time until they're ready to go to a four-year college if that's what they want to do. And that same flexibility that we ask of parents as they're parenting, we have to ask of them in terms of whatever the next step might be for their kid. And look, you know, I had a, you know, my niece was a wonderful musician in high school, and she wanted to go to a particular college that had a jazz professor that she really wanted to study with. And it was not a college with a fancy name. And her parents were like, great, let's go follow that jazz professor. She ultimately switched over to pre-med to become a veterinarian. And now she works in HR. So she didn't even use that. But her journey took these twists and turns along the way. And her parents supported that. And I think that if you were to say, what is our job? What is our number one job as parents? It is to let our kids discover who they are and help, you know, walk shoulder to shoulder beside them in that journey along the way and to be really proud of them. It's hard to be a teen and a tween. It's hard to grow up in this world of social media and competitiveness and, you know, 24/7 news reels that just don't end. You know, it's hard to take a break from that. Kids don't get to come home and relax after school and run around on a playground. They come home to social media that's telling them where everyone is at every moment of the day and seeing kids in real time at events that you're, you know, they aren't invited to or they aren't included in. And, you know, bullying and all these other things that are, you know, that are adding to the equation. And we just have to, I agree with you, sort of take a breath, let them get off the hamster wheel, get ourselves off the hamster wheel, and just support them at wherever they are and be excited for whatever that next step is. And really don't apologize to other parents. A lot of times parents will say, oh, my kid's going to this school, but here's why they chose this school. Or they feel like they have right. to qualify it with, well, they got in here, here, and here, but chose this one. It's sort of like, who cares where they got in, here, here, and here? Where are they now? And are they happy? Right. You know, do they like it? That's great. Like, let's celebrate those things.
Yeah. I've started asking high school kids, what are your plans after high school? I don't say, where are you going to school? What are you going to study? I just say, what are your plans? Because, and I've said this to my own kids, do what you want to do, but have a plan, right? Like, you're not just going to eat Cheetos on my couch and play video games. You know, there's got to be a plan. So, oh, what a perfect segue to the end. Thank you. So before we go, I want to make sure that people can find you and follow you because and reach out to you. I'm sure they're going to want to. So what's the best way to reach you guys?
They can check us out on our website at parentcompassbook.com. We are also on Instagram at parentcompass, on Twitter at parentcompass, the number one, parentcompass one, Facebook, the Parent Compass, and on LinkedIn, Cindy Muchnick and Jen Curtis.
Okay. I am going to put all those links in the show notes and in my social media so they'll be able to find you. Any final words of advice for parents or teens that you think might be helpful?
Well, I do want to say one thing and then I will do my advice, but we really do encourage parents to pick this up for a book club read. And there's a place on our website that you can actually go to and fill out a little form and we will show up at your book club and we can have a little chat and you can ask us questions. But we've gotten some amazing feedback from book clubs that have said that it's really changed their parenting and the discussion has been really valuable. And in fact, we now have a book club guide that with the second printing of the book was woven into the back of the book. And if you have a copy that doesn't have that, you can also get the book club guide on our website for free as well. But my awesome. My piece of advice, I think I would say that I am a really big believer in tangible reminders. So Cindy and I each wear a matching, no less, compass necklace that kind of helps us remember to always be following our parent compass. I give earplugs to all of my students when I start working with them. They're in this little container next to my desk at work. And I tell them that I want them to put in the earplugs metaphorically, but to carry them around with them in their backpack or in a pencil bag or whatever, as a tangible reminder to drown out the noise, to be themselves, to do what makes them feel fulfilled, and really to kind of eschew the competition and what, and just really drown that out. And so likewise, I think my piece of advice to parents would be go out and get yourself one of those little foam earplugs and carry it around in a purse or in your car or whatever, or just metaphorically have it by your side so that you can also remember to focus on your child, what makes your child uniquely them, and what makes your family special. And, you know, again, likewise, to just drown out the noise.
Love that. That's great. Cindy, how about you?
Mine might be, you know, I change them around from time to time, but I think right now what I'm really into is not comparing and competing. You know, we live in a world where there's awards and medals and grades and measurements of competing. So it's hard to not, you know, view school even as a competition against others. It's really not that. It's really a personal, you know, journey, almost competing with yourself. How can you do better next time? What have you learned from this? And how do you continue to grow? And so Jen and I have seen competitive parents. And it's pretty ugly. And we know who they are, right? We know who they are in our community. And sometimes, unfortunately, it becomes us when we then go, oh my God, you know, how did I just do that? And I think that, you know, it's important that we not compare our kids to their friends, to their siblings, to their, you know, a generation ago, what it was like, this and that. Just know that our kids are these human beings that are getting to be teens for the first time. We had our turn, Jen and I always say, we had our turn to do it. And now let's just celebrate and appreciate them and not feel the need to compare and compete. So that might be my takeaway for today.
I love it. That's perfect. This has been so helpful. Listeners, I highly recommend this book. You know, I say this all the time. I don't recommend books or products or anything that I don't use or read myself. And I really got a lot out of this. So thank you so much for being here, ladies. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you, Betsy. Betsy, you might want to get a little hamster wheel necklace, you know, to get off the hamster wheel. You could get your own tangible reminder.
I think I'm going to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
I really enjoyed my conversation with Jen and Cindy. They have a way of providing expert advice to parents, including me, while never making us feel judged or criticized. As hard as it might be for us to hear, we probably need to examine our own behavior. Yes, our intentions are good. We all want what's best for our kids, or what we think is best for them. But it's their life, and we need to step back and let them make mistakes and find their own way. Because eventually, we won't be right over their shoulder, and they'll need to figure it out on their own. At the risk of sounding like a broken record, be sure to check out the Parent Compass book. It's a really interesting read, and you'll walk away with lots of actionable steps that you can get started using today. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm grateful that you took the time to listen, and I'd really appreciate it if you would follow or subscribe to the High School Hamster Wheel podcast in your favorite podcast player. I welcome your feedback, and I'd love to hear any ideas you have for future episodes. Be sure and check out the show notes at highschoolhamsterwheel.com/108, where I will include all links mentioned during this episode. And if you know of a teenager who's unsure their next step after high school, a college student rethinking their future career path, or a young person who just needs some guidance while evaluating their career choices, I can help. You can learn more about me and the coaching I offer at BetsyJewelCoaching.com. That's it for today. I'll be back soon with another episode of the High School Hamster Wheel podcast.
Hi, this is Kim Thompson, host of Storytime Anytime, a podcast packed with songs, stories, and a whole lot of learning fun. Each episode will explore a new topic like dinosaurs, sharks, space travel, chemistry, horses, reptiles, and so much more. New episodes are out every other week, so check us out wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com. It's really story time and music at its best, exclusively for kids.